I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Sonny Grappone. He is the founder of Precision Accounting and Consulting. Like many businesses, it just took off during the pandemic. Pandemic was good for some folks, bad for others. And I think there's a lesson to be learned there that we will definitely dive into. Sonny grew up from blue-collar beginnings and really carries a message that, you know what, it doesn't matter. He said something. It's like, it doesn't matter if you're from Park Avenue or Park Bench, there's an opportunity for you. I love that saying. So tune in. Sonny, welcome.
Hey, Craig. Thanks for having me. Thanks. It's a pleasure to be on your show, and I'm really excited to kind of share my story and start this conversation.
Yeah. No, I've been enjoying our chat in the green room. And now, I just assumed, I looked at your name, I was like, this is like a classic New York name. But you're not from New York.
No, I am. My family's not, right? So it's a funny story. So, you know, my parents, my mother specifically, she's from Guyana in South America. I was raised by her and my stepfather, Anthony, so Italian-American. My nickname was always Sonny growing up for my sister. She always called me Sonny. And when I got married, I hated my first name. All right. My first name was Harpreet. It was a very religious name. The meaning obviously wasn't bad, you know, it meant God loves you, right? But nobody ever called me, and everybody called me Sonny. So when I got married, my wife said, you know, that's a nice gift gesture to your stepfather. You should take his last name, you know, and it's something that I wanted to do for a long time and just never pulled the trigger on it. And I did. And in New York, what happens is when you have to change your last name, you have to put it in the paper. Newsday or one of the big papers, you have to like fill out a thing. So before I got married, the day before, you know, I gave him the news article and I was like, oh, you know, check out what's in the paper, you know. And you know, and he looked at it and it was very emotional. You know, we started, you know, getting teary-eyed, and you know, it was just a great gift to give to him, because he definitely molded me into the man that I am today. You know, so that's where that name originates from. So when people look at me and they see Sonny Grappone, they have to take two looks at me, because the skin color to the name, it just doesn't add up. You know, I sound like an Italian mobster, but look like I'm from South America. So,
well, you know, I used to work with somebody who grew up in Long Island, and I made some crack about, you know, the concrete business, and he said, you know, I went to a wedding with a family that was in the concrete business, which is like, whoa. And for those that don't know, that's the mob, or at least
that's the mob. Yes. Masonry, concrete, you know, yeah, waste management, that type of stuff. Yeah.
We had a prior guest on that his last name, and I can't say it right, it's Travaglione or something like that. Travaglione. And he grew up in New Jersey, and his mom was picking up from, you know, he was playing with one of his buddies, and she said, "Do you know who he is?" And he's like, "No." And she's like, "His grandfather's the head of the New Jersey mob."
Oh my God. Yeah, and New Jersey's heavily, you know, influenced by the mob. You know, New York, New Jersey, definitely. Not so much anymore. It's kind of toned down, or maybe they're doing a better job of hiding it, you know, but you know, you only hear too much about the mob anymore, as opposed to like the 90s when I was growing up.
Yeah. What was it like growing up? I mean, was it scary? Was it exciting? What was it like to grow up in the middle of that?
So I grew up in the 90s. I grew up in Queens, New York, right? So obviously everybody knows where Queens, New York is, right? You think of Queens, it's fast-paced, you know, kind of hustle and bustle, right? Nobody had cars. You know, we took public transportation, public buses to school. You know, you want to look at my childhood. If you ever seen the movie The Bronx Tale, right? Like not like from that era, but like just the scene. Actually, The Bronx Tale was filmed in my neighborhood. It wasn't filmed in the Bronx. It was filmed in Jackson Heights, Queens, at our old high school. But it was like that type of like, kids hanging out on the stoop, right? You hung out all day in the park. You played basketball, handball, you played there, then you came home, hung out on the stoop all night, and then if you missed something that night, you forget about it. You'd be teased all day the next day. So we grew up without any. We didn't have a lot of money growing up. As I said before, my mother came from a third world country, Guyana. It's a little country right next to Brazil for, people that don't know. Jim Jones, right? Everybody knows Jim Jones. That's like the Guyana's, unfortunately, fame to glory. But anyway, she came to this country at 17 years old with nothing, had me and my sister, and basically worked at this company called Waldbaum's. It was a big supermarket chain. Worked her way up from, a cashier to, basically the head bookkeeper there. Met my stepfather, who was a manager at the store, and they got married. And my mom came home one day and was like, "We're moving to Long Island," and I'm like, "Long Island?" And like, this was like this whole other world to me. We're talking like it's like an hour away. It's like, back then Long Island was, sticks, so when I moved out there, it was a little overwhelming. I moved to Levittown. So anybody that knows Levittown, Levittown is actually the first suburban area in America. That's where they built the suburbia neighborhood from Levittown, William Levitt. He was a World War II vet. So when I came there, not to bring race or anything into it, but I was probably the third or fourth darkest kid in that whole town. So I felt a little out of place, when I first got there. But the way I made friends was through sports. I was big into basketball, so that's kind of where I made all my friends. Yeah, and growing up in Levittown, I had a great experience. I really did. As years went on, the neighborhood got more diverse, and I just had a great experience growing up there. And I worked from the age of 14, actually 12, I should say 12 years old. I was bagging groceries at my mother's supermarket store for tip money. That's when I first started. And throughout the years, I always had some type of side business. Building computers was my first side business. I built them from scratch to people. Then when I went to college, I started my own auto detailing, auto body shop that I did for many years. Yeah, I've had quite a few side businesses. I always had that entrepreneurial mindset of always wanting to make more money and have something on my own because of the way I grew up, when I was younger, in the 90s and not having that much. I grew up in a one room apartment where I shared a bed with my mom and my sister, till I was like 12. So growing up in that mindset, I didn't want that for myself or for my family, and my mom always told us, like, look at all everything we've been through and how much we've obtained. She was the example and the role model for me to know that she came from nothing. She built this life up, and now I've been given all these privileges, and I shouldn't waste it, And I went to college for 2 years. I played basketball out of college. I tore my MCL twice, and after that, it was all downhill. I didn't know what to do with myself, so I kind of worked two jobs. Always, I had my side business and my auto detailing business, and I partied hard. I made a lot of mistakes, drinking and God knows what. And when I got the age of 25, I kind of had, and I always say this to kids, I feel like 25 is the age where your brain fully develops to like kind of like you're mature enough to know what you want, just from my experience for me. And I remember
No,
telling
and
myself,
I think there's some science in that. I legit, I think there's some science in that.
really?
I've, yeah, it's one of the arguments, and this is a little bit of a controversial topic, but it's one of the arguments
Yeah, sure.
against kids smoking pot. It has a bigger effect all the way up to like age 25 because the mind's still developing.
Yes. Listen, I experimented when I was younger, especially with pot. I'm not going to be shy about that. I did, but I quit when I was 25. I still see the after effects of it. I'm not joking. Like, I have a very hard time, I notice sometimes, like putting my thoughts together and getting them out there, as opposed to before when I didn't do that type of stuff. But when I quit and I started doing all that, I was working my detailing business, and it had been like 3, 4 years now, 4 years. And I was already at 25. I was starting to have knee problems. I was starting to have back issues. And I remember going to the doctor, and he's like, if you do this type of work, he's like, by 40, you're going to be done. He's like, I'm telling you right now. So I remember going home, and my mother's dream for me was to go to college and finish school. She's like, "Why don't you just take a class?" She's like, "What's going to hurt you?" You know, and I did. And I took a class and I ended up, like I said, 25, right? That mindset where I hated school when I was younger. All of a sudden, 25 years old, here I am taking a class. I actually like learning. I was like, "Oh my God, like I actually am very interested in it." And I took a couple classes and I had a real knack for accounting. And my mother being a bookkeeper, my aunts all being accountants and CPAs. So I took an app for it. I saw that I had a real need for it. And I went for accounting. I went back to school when I was 25 years old. I started off when I was older, started from scratch. I graduated at 29. And my career kind of took off from there. You know, I worked corporate for a bunch of years. I worked in three World Trade in downtown Manhattan, Cantor Fitzgerald, a couple big firms. And I got tired of the corporate world. I didn't like commuting to the city every day, 4 hours commute. And I was doing consulting for a while, and a guy I consulted for was trying to get me to work for him. And I finally pulled the trigger and said yes. And I came home and took less money. And I say this as a lesson for people because I feel like I always cross that road with a lot of people that are close to me where they're not happy at their jobs and they have to make a sacrifice, that decision. You know, it's that pivotal moment where like you take less money to do to for your sanity, you know, and I see that a lot. And it was the best thing I ever did. You know, that's why money at that time can't dictate that choice, you know, kind of have to be true to yourself. And I came back home and this gentleman basically mentored me to the point where I brought where he made it, he put it out there for me. He said, "If you bring in enough business," he's like, I'll make you a partner, or vice versa. And basically, I brought in enough business where basically I was able to call the shots, and I was able to come have him come in on my business that I had on the side and make it legit. And I became 51% owner on that business, and he was 49% owner. And Precision Accounting was born, and that's how it basically came about.
Wow. Now, was his business an accounting firm as well?
Sure, yes, it's called Comprehensive Hospitality Solutions. It's a niche in the restaurant and hotel industry. We do all restaurants and hotels through that business for accounting.
And your business, was it also in that niche or was it in a different niche?
No, well, what he liked about it is that we can, when people see his name of his business, they automatically just think restaurants. So he's like, "All right, this will get us into all other fields." And it kind of took a U-turn and developed a niche in construction. So we do a lot of construction companies and a lot of law firms. Those are the ones that pay too. I'm not gonna lie, but the work is a lot more valuable and insightful. And they kind of live and die by accounting, especially in construction, with job costing, you know, union type of accounting. It's basically called cost accounting, but it's a very valuable skill set that not many have.
So that's an interesting combo, lawyers and construction. I wouldn't necessarily put those together.
Yeah, it just happened like that, you know. We have other clients. We have an HVAC company. Actually, we were just talking about your HVAC problem, right? We have an HVAC company we take care of. We have all different fields, but predominantly, I would say 60% of my book of business is construction and law firms, you know. And law firms I like just because I like that their concern is like, I just want to make money. You know what? You do what you have to do. I don't want any surprises. I'll pay you whatever. As long as I get no surprises, I'm okay with that. On the other end, the hospitality industry is the opposite. Like they are trying to get involved in the day-to-day when they don't need to, you know, and they don't pay as well. I'll just say, you know, but that's a business, and you choose your audience wisely. That's what I always say to my partner, you know, always know your audience and who you're working for.
Why do you think there's a difference between hospitality and law? Why are the hospitality guys trying to get into all the details?
Well, it's not that. It's more so like they want the most amount of service for the least amount of money, right? They're always nickel and diming, yeah. And listen, I get it, but at the same time, like, you know, like the service we're providing is very valuable. And the one that I always try to tell people, stop looking at me like an expense. Look at me as an investment, right? I'm here to make you more money. Right, like my bottom line is when I come in and I become your accountant, your outsourced CFO, and I'm doing your tax work, whatever it may be, I'm going to save you more money than my yearly fee. And 93% of the time, and that's an accurate number because I went through it, 93% of the time, I am successful at that.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, there's an important lesson there. I have a buddy who was a CPA, and he was starting, you know, when he was starting his firm, And I kept telling him, I said, you don't want to be somebody's cost center. You need to figure out how to bring value. You
Yes.
never want to be viewed as a cost center.
100%. I tell that because that is the mindset that they have. And listen, we still take care of a lot of restaurants. We take care of a lot of franchises. And the ones that don't penny pinch and just say, like, they see the value of the numbers, they're willing to pay, right? Scare money doesn't make money, right? So, like, they're willing to pay what it needs to take. And those are the ones that are the most successful. And the proof is in the pudding. Every time we have those type of clients, they're the most successful. They're the ones that are with us for years, right? Same goes in construction and law firms that we do, you know, and we provide a service, an advisory service that really, like, for example, right? Like, our job is not only to do your books and your taxes, but like to find tax breaks in the IRS code and find different ways to save you different, you know, different amounts of money, right? So a perfect example is we had a place, this law, another law firm we're taking care of. They need to hire three more lawyers that they don't have the funds for it, right? Or nor do they know if they have the funds for it, right? So when they came on to us, I said, well, let me look at your book of business. Let me look at the clients that you have, and let me see if each client that you take on, if it's self-sufficient, right? Like, you're taking on this client, do you have the payroll to cover it? You know, or are you just breaking even, right? So I did the numbers for them. I did some research and I said, you don't have the money to hire three more people. But I said, let me do a little more research and see what I could find to save you some more money. So I found a kind of not a cafeteria 125 plan, it's an extension of it. I found a wellness program that is basically offering FICA tax savings. So basically, the government wants you to stay healthy. Right. So they give you these wellness plans to sign up for if you're 20 employees or more. And if you sign up for these wellness plans, it comes with a gym membership, mental health counseling, you know, concierge medical services. They want you to stay healthy because if you stay healthy, that lowers insurance costs for them. So they give you a tax break for that.
Is that federal insurance or state insurance? Or is a federal tax or state tax?
That it's federal for payroll tax. On
Really?
FICA taxes, yes. So they'll give you a tax credit for that. And basically, the way it works is that you enroll in this wellness program. It's a pre-tax benefit that you, so we just did it for this client, and we were able to save him $688 a month per employee. You know, so you do the math, right? You know, it almost worked out, you know, I would say around 34,000 in 1 year. You know, for one employee, so he has about 14. So, like, the guy does big numbers. He net profits, you know, in revenue. He does very well in revenue, but his payroll is kind of, you know, hurting him in a way. But what happened was that we were able to save him enough money where he was able to hire two more lawyers, not three, but through that FICA tax savings. And it's a big thing that we've explored in the past, but we didn't really take advantage of it until this last year because a lot of people are looking for money to hire good people, right? Qualified people, but they don't have those incentives to get people. And this is a great incentive, like to hire people. Well, you get this wellness program, you get a free gym membership, you get all these added-ons, and then it lowers their FICA tax savings at the end of the year astronomically.
So something you said a minute ago, I've never heard this phrase before, and it really struck me. You said scared money doesn't make money. Am I repeating that right?
Scared money doesn't make money. Yes, I tell my wife that all the time.
So what was it again? Afraid?
Scared money doesn't make money, right? So, like, if you're operating from a fear standpoint, right, like that, like, I can't make this investment, I'm too scared, right? Like, you know, it takes money to make money. It's a kind of the same type of metaphor, right? Like, you know, if I'm scared, if I'm always operating at, like, I tell my wife that, right? Like, she always likes keeping our money in a CD that gets like 3%, right? She never wants to take a risk and, you know, take like 8, 9%, you know, or put it in a mutual fund, a little more aggressive, you know? And I'd always say to her, you know, scared money doesn't make any money, you know, right? So if we want to be adventurous or a little risk takers, you know, more risk, the bigger reward, right? So I tell people that are my clients too, you know, or, you know, new clients that look at me like an investment, right? Like, I guarantee you, I'm going to make that money. I'm going to find those funds for you to be able to live out this dream or whatever vision you have for your business. You know, and I've had it happen numerous times. People that started off with one business and all of a sudden they're expanding out to five to six locations. We've had that multiple times. We know, working in the restaurant industry, we got familiar with franchises and how to do that and how to allocate funding to do that, what you should be doing with your profits and stuff like that. It's a whole, different type of science, but that's kind of where I'm going from, where, scam money doesn't make any money.
Well, something I see all the time, and so I do marketing, and when the economy gets tough or something goes wonky, we're one of the first things that they cut.
Oh, same here. Same here.
And I think of, Henry Ford said those that would cut advertising to save money are like those that would stop their watch to save time.
I love that. I absolutely love that saying because it is so true. And we say that all the time in our business, all the time. It's like every time when things go south, and like and when I do this, and they don't like when I do this, but because I try to tell them, like, listen, it's time to put your big boy pants on. Right. And let's start to be, that's a little humbling for them to hear. But like when I show them a profit and loss statement, right? Showing your revenue, your COGS, right? Your cost of goods sold, your expenses, and then what your bottom line number is after all that, right? And I put a percentage of revenue, right? So here's your expenses and here's how much of the revenue it represents. And when you do accounting, most of the time it represents 0.75 to 1% of your revenue. Like, so when I show them that, I say, am I not worth 1% of your $1 million annual revenue or $5 million? And same thing can go for marketing, right? I know marketing. I see it on the P&L and I see it in the bank all the time. It probably represents anywhere from, 0.5% to 1.5% of annual revenue, but like they don't want to look at that. But they'll look at kind of accounting and marketing, but they won't look at the major things that are holding them down, like payroll, for example, right? Because they don't have the bandwidth to look into that and kind of seeing what's dragging them down. I'll tell you a good story about that. I just got a physical therapist months ago, and I was actually sharing this on another podcast. He's not making any money. His revenue's increasing to $8 million a year. I look at his financials and I say, all right, let's take a look at your financials. I said, let's compare 2024 to 2023, right? And let's compare the two and we'll kind of see what's going on here. I look at his revenue. His revenue is 7.5 million exact in both the years. His revenue stayed the same. I look at his payroll. His payroll went up $550,000. So explain that to me. Your revenue stayed the same, but your payroll just went up $550,000. Why? And like you always see trend analysis. You always see the trends, right? If your revenue goes down, then your purchases go down. Your payroll goes down. It all falls in the line. It all goes in correlation. So he just like, I don't know. He had no answer for me. He was embarrassed, and I felt embarrassed for him. I really did. And we started digging in, paying out all this overtime that he can't afford. On salary-based employees, which was baffling me, he started paying out benefits, extra benefits that he was paying for that was astronomical. He had this 401k guy that he was paying big time admin fees to. So at the end of the day, when it was all said and done, now he's in the green. He made all the cuts that he needed to make, and he's finally profitable. We signed him up for a wellness program. It ended up saving him so far in 6 months. He's saving close up to $35,000 right now. At the end of the year, he ended up saving 70 grand on that wellness program.
Wow.
Like these are the things that we're doing for them that, people, the value that people need to see if they're willing to hear it.
Wow. Well, Sonny, I've learned a lot. I've never heard about that. That's pretty amazing. So if you have one thought that you want to leave somebody with before we wrap up, what would that one thought be?
I think, we were talking about before, like I said, look at yourself like an investment, right? That you're worth it. As I said to you before, from park avenue to park bench, it doesn't matter your circumstance. You got to be willing to work for what you want. No, life is not fair. All right. Everybody has to work harder than the next guy. We're just in different stages of the pyramid. Right? Some are up top, some are in the middle, some are on the below. And if you're below, you have to work that much harder than the next person, but that's what builds character. right? That's what builds work ethic. You can't teach people work ethic. Yeah, there's a talent thing. Don't get me wrong. There is a talent thing to this whole thing. You can't teach someone to be Steph Curry or Michael Jordan, right? But you know what? If you had the right work ethic, I guarantee you, like my mother, like myself, you can work yourself through the ranks and open up your own business if you really put your mind to it. But are you really willing to sacrifice the time and the energy? So I say that is like, if you really want to go out and do it, value yourself. See if you can do that. If you can take the time, start off with a couple goals. Start accomplishing like 1 or 2 goals a week, right? See what your time is worth and what you're doing with your time, because it goes by very fast. And the older you get, the harder it's going to get. So I say that, to leave you off.
Wow, that's awesome. And Sonny, how can people reach you?
So you could go to precisionaccountingandconsulting.com. And if you look up Precision Accounting Consulting, Melville, New York, we should come up, because there's a couple of Precision Accountings. And you can reach out to us on there. You can look up Sonny Grappone on LinkedIn also. And you can also look for our podcast, The Profit Principle. It's on YouTube and Spotify, where we give some tax tips and accounting tips to individuals and businesses.
Well, that's awesome. Well, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I had a great time. Thank you again.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.